Welcome to 21. I'm Drew Lasker. I'm a family man, professional athlete, and business owner of Train Harder 21 and 21 Media. Yvonne Harris and I have teamed up and created this podcast to explore the life lessons that come along with being an athlete. Why 21? It's my jersey number and a key part to my great fortune and career. So it seems fitting for this podcast.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Harris. I'm a proud boy mom and an advocate for efforts that improve the lives of women and children. Experiencing success as an athlete or in any facet of life does not happen by accident. There must be clarity, intention, and the willingness to pivot. Our guests on 21 share their journeys in ways that cause you to reflect, assess, and then take action. We are so thankful for the stories shared on this podcast because Drew and I know their wisdom shortens someone else's path to success. Enjoy this episode of 21.
Welcome back to 21. You've heard it before. Making it to the pros is dang near impossible. Only 3 out of 10,000 male high school students make it to the NBA. Here on 21, we always talk about chasing your dream, but making sure that you always have a backup plan. But what if I told you that backup plan would consist of working for the NBA head office, or the Indiana Pacers, Detroit Lions, or LeBron's Cavs? Not too bad, right? Well, that's today's guest's resume, as she currently serves as the Chief Revenue Officer for the Houston Dynamo Dash. We welcome Deanna Witter. Deanna, welcome to 21.
Thank you for having me.
Well, before we start and dive into your story, can we start off with a little team stretch?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we got a game that we like to play called 21 Questions with 21. So we're just going to throw you right in the hot seat. Top it off, are you a Whataburger girl or In-N-Out?
Ooh, Whataburger.
Beer or tequila?
Tequila.
Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Twitter or Instagram?
Twitter.
Tupac or Biggie?
Biggie.
Jordan or LeBron?
Jordan, oddly enough.
Popeyes or Chick-fil-A?
Chick-fil-A.
Las Vegas or Miami?
Vegas.
Action or rom-com?
Action.
IHOP or Waffle House?
IHOP.
East Coast or West Coast?
Man, that's a hard one. West Coast.
Early bird or night owl?
Night owl, for sure.
Car or truck?
Car.
Netflix or Hulu?
Netflix.
Sprite or Dr. Pepper?
Ooh, Dr. Pepper.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Xbox or PlayStation?
PlayStation.
Dishes or laundry?
Neither. Laundry if I have to pick one.
iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Homemade or takeout?
Definitely takeout.
And finally, are you a club type of girl or a house party?
I want to go out. Let's go to a club. I don't want to clean up after the house party.
Well, I'm looking at it from the perspective, we've been pretty much stuck for a year. So like, I'm with you. Let's get to the club, even though I'm
let's get out.
I'm now off the hot seat, Deanna.
That was fun. Thank you.
Okay. So for our listeners, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from?
So I'm from Flint, Michigan. That's where I was born and raised.
Flint in the house. Okay. So did you play any sports growing up?
Yeah, actually, sports was an important influence in my life. So yeah, I started playing basketball when I was in second grade, and I started playing soccer in fourth grade. And then from there, I just sort of picked up anything I could. So, you know, I'd play backyard football, broke my collarbone, actually playing tackle football with the boys, and ran track through middle school. And it conflicted with soccer, you know, as I got into high school, but ran when I could, if the time allowed. But yeah, I played a lot of sports.
Awesome. So you actually attended Central Michigan University and received a BA in business administration with an emphasis in marketing. What factored into you deciding on that major?
Yeah. So hey, I'll go back a little bit and integrate the sports question with this question. But, you know, like I said, I played sports growing up. It was a huge influence in my life. Becoming an athlete really gave me purpose and really defined who I wanted to be and how I felt about being an athlete, how I felt about being a part of a team is how I wanted to feel for the rest of my life. And it really set me on course and really focused me into wanting to live out the life that I lead today. I was raised by a single mother. I lived with my grandparents growing up for most of my majority of my childhood up until 10. And then my mom was sort of on her own with us from 10 on. And, you know, it was interesting because once I had sports, I had sort of a complete format of a family. You know, I felt like I was really connected with a group of individuals with a coach. Also, coaches obviously trickled into that environment. And once I knew I wanted to be in sports and being sort of an athlete for the rest of my life, I just knew I had to go to college. And ultimately, Central was the best opportunity I had. I had opportunities to go play soccer at other schools. And ultimately, I was really focused on getting the best education I could because I knew I wanted to work in professional sports. And there was this opportunity when I was younger. I was turning 14 and my mom, through a friend, had a contact through the Pistons. And he was able to get me and my best friend seats at the scores table courtside. And that moment was very important, you know, sort of transformative because I was looking around and I see all these people walking around in suits. I'm like, I don't know what those people do. But I'm going to do that. That was sort of the first part of it. So I knew going to college was important. I was a first generation college student and a first generation graduate. So I wanted to go to the best college that I could go to. And Central to me was that at that time, before my eyes were open to the rest of the world. But at the same time, it was the best opportunity. So that's why I went to Central. And I originally went there thinking I wanted to still be on the bench. I thought being a part of the team as like an athletic trainer was going to be my first thought. And after my first year, I realized I would have been absolute torture to sit there and watch somebody else live out like the playing dream I had. And I went back to that vision of the people in suits. And I started doing research my freshman year about what those people did. And then I got some great direction from there about the opportunity. And I switched degrees to business administration with a focus on marketing and then also advertising.
Yeah, that's a great lesson learned there for any of our athletes out there, that if you don't make it as an athlete to whatever sport that you aspire to be at, that's not the be all end all. There's still a way to find yourself in that industry in which you did. So, and one thing we always talk about here is about having that backup plan. And you seem like you've had that plan from an early age, which is rare. You know, usually college students, they get there and they've been in those 4 years trying to figure out exactly what they want to do. But you already knew what you wanted to do for that next step. But what advice would you give any of our college students who are majoring in business?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is business can be so broad, you know, and I think that that's always a key. I think broad is okay. And sometimes we take broad routes to give us many options. But when you have too many options, it doesn't allow you to start to set course and a plan to where and who you really want to be. So what I usually tell people is, knowing who you are and who you want to be is one of the greatest assets you can have, because then you can start to truly build a plan and start to build a network and learn the aspects of those things so you can become that, you know, career or that person that you're looking to become. And I think that's what was really a difference maker for me. I knew exactly what I wanted when I was 14. To your point, it's rare, but I was very aware of my environment. And I knew that like truly anything was possible and that I had control of that, as long as I was dedicated to becoming what I wanted to become. And it took true dedication to do that. And that dedication allowed me to go outside, meet people, get outside of my comfort zone, and ask the right questions to put me and set me on the right course. And if you don't know what you want, then you won't know who to ask. And you don't know where to obtain those resources.
So Deanna, what were some of the tangible actions that you took though in college? Many of the guests on 21 talk about internships. I hear a through line for networking coming through and what you're talking about. So if a college student is listening right now, give them some plays that they can make.
Yeah. So the first thing I did is once I realized that freshman year, it was actually the first semester that, you know, athletic training was not exactly what I thought I wanted to do. I went to the Pistons website and I looked at job opportunities and looked at the job descriptions. And while I was going through that research, thinking that was my first step, they happened to have a job fair. And most teams, most organizations, especially in the sports industry, we do a lot of recruiting and hiring through job fairs. And we host those. And so I saw that they were having this career fair in February. So I signed up. I went out to it as a freshman. And I went to every sports team table and just said, listen, I'm a freshman. I know I'm not eligible for a position today. I'm here to learn. Who is it? You know, what are the positions out of college? Who is it that you hire? And what are the things that I can do between now and my junior year to get an internship with you? And what are the things that I can do between that point, once I got to my junior year, what can I do to get hired? And I went back to that career fair every single year, kept all the business cards, I connected with them, and I did everything they said. I would do something and I would email them and go, I just did what you said. I changed my major. You know, I changed my major. You know, sales was the path. I felt really connected with the opportunity. But marketing and advertising is sort of the science behind the sale. So I took those. That's why I changed my major to marketing and advertising. And then sales is a lot about getting comfortable, you know, being uncomfortable, speaking with random strangers, talking about a product, becoming a people person. And so they're like, go serve tables, go work retail, like just get used to that like minute moment of a relationship that you can build with somebody. And that's what I did. And you know, I just kept in contact and went back to that career fair every year. And there was probably like, here's that girl again. And by my senior year, you know, I think it was nice because I was very familiar. I was comfortable in the space where everybody else was new to that room and nervous. I could bring a very confident approach to talking to somebody, and I can be very specific about what they were looking for and what I could bring to that organization because I'd done my research and I was developing to become the kind of person that they would benefit from hiring. So by my senior year, I was invited to an MBA career fair. It was invitation only. And I walked away with 6 job offers with 6 separate MBA teams my senior year because of that work.
And as you share that story, and it's applicable to any major, any industry, mm-hmm. you cannot wait until your second semester of your senior year to start your job search.
Yeah, the question is how bad do you want it, right? You get out of what you put in. And I wanted it bad. I mean, I was hungry to get into the NBA. I said I was going to do it and nothing was going to stop me but me. And it was going to be between me and my efforts to be the right person for those opportunities. And I think that's the hard part is we give ourselves a lot of slack, like we have time. And it's something I always sat in those rooms and be like, you don't have to pick a major yet and you have time. I'm like, man, these people, like if you read the books, and I was reading about entrepreneurs and people who are being successful, these are the people who are doing the things that like they made it life or death if they did not take the right actions. And I just really stuck on those words when I was developing.
So did you enjoy college, Deanna? Like you played a little bit while you were there too, right?
No. So interesting enough. Yeah. I mean, I saw college as work, you know, and I did have, you know, fun, but I would say that I got more socially out of high school. And I think I walked away with college with, you know, a handful of real friends because I took 18 credits each semester, 21 credits my senior year, you know, each of those semesters to graduate on time. I had a scholarship, you know, so I didn't have that fifth year to sort of be casual. And then I worked in that senior year. I worked, I think it was 3 jobs my senior year to be able to get through. And so, yeah, I'm just a really dedicated, hardworking sort of individual and I thrive off that, but I find ways to have.
So you looked up at the end of your senior year and I heard you say you had 6 offers. Can you share a little bit about those teams or how you made your decision? So, I mean, it was a blessing that you had so many to choose from. Sometimes choice can create other complications or challenges.
Yeah. So the opportunities were the team I was really obviously looking to work for was the Pistons. The Pistons, the Indiana Pacers, the Phoenix Suns, the Sacramento Kings, the New Jersey Nets. At the time, they were the New Jersey Nets at the time. And then the Cleveland Cavaliers, if I didn't see that one yet. So that was the 6. And I narrowed it down to my top 4. And then they actually invited me to come out to those organizations. So they actually brought me in to just take a tour, meet with the team and see if there was a fit for me. You know, so it's very, I would say more heavily recruited as if you were an athlete. It had that same sense because I was recruited as a soccer player. So I had that same feeling. And I actually, you know, I narrowed it down to the Indiana Pacers. And I think it was a shock to my family because they thought like I was the Pistons was like the dream. And I think ultimately it came down to the Pacers, one, because of leadership. You know, I think it's really important that you line yourself with the right people. And not to say the other organizations have great people. There's just really something about, I felt like the they were talking to me and treating me like a real person, not a young girl, not like this girl has gone through some shit and she's gonna like, we like the sort of rough edges of her. I think we appreciated what I brought and my attitude that I brought to the room. I also knew that, you know, there's a sense that if I, whatever I invested into the organization, they're gonna invest right back into me. And that was proven, you know, based on where I went from there. And then also the experience of the fact that the other teams were very successful and the Indiana Pacers were sort of on this down trying to make their way back up. And I thought, you know, working and learning in an environment that was more challenging would set me up hopefully for experiences that would put me in a better position to be able to make a difference there, but also make a difference with other teams that might be struggling. I mean, ultimately, if you're an individual that knows how to sell and build programs in a time where you're not got LeBron James like I did in Cleveland, think about the value that could bring to an organization if I know those opportunities and how to do that. So I really tapped into that as well.
Well, and I think how you approached it was really smart. You know, oftentimes people choose the job that they want to go to for different reasons. You focused on really aspects of people culture and, you know, how you felt in the organization, the direction of the leadership, and two, how they saw you. You want to make sure that you're going someplace where you're being celebrated and not just tolerated. So you went against the grain, it sounds like. Everyone kind of had you pegged for one organization, but I love to hear that you went with your gut. And you felt like this other organization was best suited for you long term.
Yeah, it definitely was. And then to your point too, when people think about things that play a role into it, I will say a lot of conversations I have throughout my career with individuals making these similar decisions about where they want to work is, you know, there's so many personal factors that play into it. Your family and the proximity to home, boyfriends, girlfriends, relationships, friendships. And I know it's really hard to see that separation, you know, when you're young and you're leaving college, you want to keep those things close, but it's really important that you think about like those people, if it's a true relationship, especially a boyfriend, girlfriend, and your family's always going to be there, like it will work out if it's meant to work out. So go make a decision that's best for your future, not for the moment. And I think that that's really important. And I say that as somebody who is literally like, I've been with my husband since high school. So I had left my high school boyfriend to take this job in Michigan, but we went to separate colleges 2 hours apart. I never really made a decision around him anyways, but we are married now still 20 years later after being together. But I think often we get into these conversations and we're trying to convince somebody to make a move. And there's like a personal component that holds them back. But you got to think about the outset of the future of that investment to make.
Well, and Deanna, when I hear you say that, I think you're speaking to the heart of many women. A lot of women make decisions based on everyone else, right?
Yeah. And people pleasers. Yeah.
Or who they have to support. And oftentimes what's best for them is the last thing that they factor into the equation. So I know someone needed to hear you say that today. So I'm glad you did.
Glad I did too.
So you started with the Pacers. Now take us through a few of the steps. You know, Drew introduced you at the beginning, very impressive experiences, but talk to us in more detail about your career and all of your different roles.
I can make this a long conversation or a short one in terms of this part, but you know, after I started off with Indiana Pacers and group sales. So had to learn that product obviously and build up. And by my second year, I was the number one group sales rep. And it was interesting because at that point, my director had left and an opening came open for a manager. They were going to hire a manager of group sales and asked me to step up and interview for it. And unfortunately, I didn't get it. But it really allowed me to sort of open my eyes that leadership was the path I really wanted to take. I wanted that job more than anything at that moment. And when I didn't get it, I was definitely heartbroken. It was at the time where I was still trying to work through like what emotions meant, like how much I loved what I was doing. And like that opportunity was there. But like I said, it didn't happen, but it allowed me to open up my eyes to go, ultimately, what am I working toward? And I want to be, and I was like, okay, I want to be in a position that the VP was in that made the decision on me, but also to build a team and a strategy and run the ticket sales team. And ultimately I wanted to be a vice president. I was like, okay, what do I have to do to be a vice president? I need to widen my scope of learning on the sales perspective. I'm only selling group sales. I need to go sell season tickets. So I left and I went to Detroit, to the Detroit Lions in 08, and I sold season tickets for the Lions. And that was in their 0-16 season. So this is the worst place to sell season tickets. But we were undefeated in the preseason. So in the core of selling, we looked good and we did very well at that time. But we sold pretty well. You know, we took a lot of bumps and bruises across, you know, along that experience. But about 6 months later, I got a call back from the Pacers that the person that they had hired instead of me, they were moving him into another role. It wasn't working out. I don't know the details and I didn't care to ask, but they moved him into another role and they wanted to talk to me now about coming back and being the director of group sales. I'm like, okay, so I'm 24. I was really upset when I left. So I almost don't want to say yes, but at the same time, like, here's this great opportunity to prove myself. They're going to give me another chance. And it's at a heightened level. I have to say yes to this, you know? So I went back to the Pacers and I became the director of group sales. And I was there for another 3.5 years, but we moved the business forward, you know, hitting, like, it went from like the 22nd team to the 7th team in the league in group sales. And so things were going really well. And I was on track, you know, like I said, developing. And then my VP left and I stepped up and became the senior director of sales and pretty much served as an interim vice president for about a year and a half. And then ultimately didn't get the VP position there. And ultimately, the CMO brought in some other guys. And then from there, I was like, okay, what do I want to do now? Like, do I stay or do I go? And ultimately I was ready. Like, I was very much ready for the next step. And unfortunately it wasn't there for me. So at that point, I actually got reached out to by the league office in NBA. And I got an opportunity with the NBA league office as a director of in the team marketing business operations group. And that was one of the most, you know, phenomenal opportunities for me. It's out in New York and you travel the country consulting teams on best practices and ways to grow and generate, you know, revenue through ticket sales, partnership marketing, and marketing efforts. And so that was a great opportunity traveling and working with the NBA league office. And this is like a very pivotal moment for me because it's like they say it's like getting your PhD in the industry. And I would say it's very much that because you get a peek behind the curtain of every organization, what works, what doesn't work, the best practices, leadership aspects, emphasis on culture, and that an emphasis on people culture as well, as we were talking about earlier.
So did you get a chance to travel to all the teams and meet with leadership in the different organizations?
Some teams, not every team. So the league divides everybody up. That's when I had my twins as well. So that was interesting. To have twins while traveling, you know, and then I got recruited. So he brought me to the Cavaliers in May of 14. And at the time it was really interesting because the opportunity was, here's this team, one of the teams. Yes, like I'm the person. So we moved to Cleveland, get into there. And 3 months later, LeBron makes his announcement that he's coming home and our business like just flipped right side up, you know? And so everything that you're there for, strategy you're there for changes.
So did LeBron come to Cleveland because he knew you were now there?
I wish that was the case. I wish that was the case. And our focus, like I said, changed. You're now looking at ways to maximize revenue, strategies to maximize revenue, but also create loyalty with the fans. I mean, often when you have something like that happens, a significant event like that happens, a championship, a player, a transaction, it attracts fans that are not there for the long haul, but for the moment. And I think most people would categorize them as bandwagon fans. They're very important to every organization. So how do you start to build a true relationship with them in your brand? So we focus a lot on creating strategies and executing ways in which we can create that loyalty. And then let me think here. From there, I was there for 5 years, grew, went to four NBA finals, won a championship in 16. I mean, the moments in Cleveland are almost like, feel like a dream. I mean, those are things that some people in their career never experience. And I just feel so blessed and lucky to have experienced those things because ultimately, even though you're not on the court and you're not the one truly lifting the trophy, you have this sense like, I made it. Like, this is a reflection of all your hard work. And I think everybody had that sense at the Cavs that had gone through what they'd gone through to get to that moment in their career, you know? And, you know, at the end of, as we get into 18-19 season, you know, as we were going into the 18-19 season, I was at a point where I was like, I'm ready for more. You know, I want to move into a position where I'm not just leading ticket sales. I mean, I've done so many things out in Cleveland. We've hit every record. I mean, what much more? There's not much more I can do in this market to make a difference. And, you know, I think overseeing more and widening my experience would be the next move for me. And is there an organization where I can go and make a difference in that position? Lucky enough, I was connected with the new team president at the Dynamo and Dash, where I am today, John Walker, who had recently had served as the SVP of revenue for the Memphis Grizzlies. And he joined the club in November of 18 and gave me a call. It was like early December, we started conversations. And by February, I was moving my whole family to Houston and joining the club here in my new capacity, my new role as the chief revenue officer.
I just want to make sure I'm following the path. Is this the first revenue role that you've had?
No, so all of ticket sales is revenue. It's just okay. One component of revenue. So revenue encompasses ticket sales, this retention of ticket sales as well. So ticket sales and service, partnership sales and marketing, and then retail components as well as concessions.
Deanna, we're in this space where diversity and inclusion has come to the forefront. What are your thoughts when you hear that there are no or few women candidates for leadership positions in sports operations?
Well, I think there's obviously candidates. And I think there's a lot of qualified women to continue to be or be considered for leadership positions in our industry and on the front office side. I believe that there's a lot of women that are there. The challenge has been is getting individuals who have the ability to make those hires see the value that those women or people of color can bring into those organizations. So there's a gap, and I think that I think that gap is closing as we continue to have conversations and bringing that to the forefront of our society. It's amazing how often, I would say, unconscious bias plays a role in some of those decision-making. Because, I mean, I've been in this industry now for 16 years, and it's amazing the relationships I have are so strong and diverse and trustworthy. And it's interesting to know that the statistics and the things that we hear, it's just almost like, wow, how is that even possible? But it's a challenge and it's a problem. And I think we're going to continue to see that gap close.
Well, Deanna, I'm energized listening to you, but I know there are other women who are going to listen to this podcast and hear you. It's got to be hard. And while, you know, we just discussed there are women candidates out there, listening to your story, you were in some very busy roles. I know you were working some long hours. You had twins. How did you integrate it all? How did you make it work?
You know, ultimately, this is a lifestyle. I think that that's the biggest thing, is that if you try to separate the personal life and the work life, that's going to be a barrier. And I think ultimately, and I've noticed this throughout my career, it's a question I'm asked all the time, and I'm trying to like just get rid of the question, is work-life balance. And you don't ask men generally about work-life balance. You ask women about work-life balance, right? And so it automatically puts this pressure on a woman that she's supposed to have these two separate lives where she's going 100%, you know, in both of these separate categories. Well, for me, I've always just integrated them. Like this is who I am. I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a sister, I'm a daughter, I'm a executive, I'm a sports professional, I'm a leader, I'm a seller, you know, I'm a service person. It's all sort of like in my demographic or characteristics of who I am. And I integrate all of those things. But I think some of those pressures, like in that sort of perception of what those supposed to look like, really plays a role in that concept.
We always hear the term, the business of professional sports. And when we hear that term, we always look at it from the perspective of player and organization. But listening to your story and your journey, it's so much that goes behind the scenes. And I know some of our listeners are like, wow, I didn't realize all of that stuff happens. But from a general public's perspective, a position within a sports team is always viewed as glamorous. Obviously, we know there's a lot more that goes behind. Just take us through a typical day for you.
Well, I mean, if you incorporate, again, the lifestyle, you know, I wake up like everybody else at probably 6:30 in the morning, you know, my husband and I divide time. So to give you a little perspective, my husband sacrificed his career when we found out we were having twins and I was traveling with the league office. So my husband is a registered nurse. He has a bachelor's in nursing from University of Michigan. And because I was traveling for that job, you know, he decided that he would take a year off and we would evaluate it from there. But it's been 8 years later and it's never made sense for him to go back to work, for me to do what I do and support our family. So we consider like my role, my job and my career opportunities are our career opportunities. We definitely share in those opportunities as well. So he'll take care of the twins and I'll take care of the three-year-old. I take the three-year-old to school. So today I took her to school. And then I'm on call, like in this environment or even in the office, I'm in meetings 95% of my day. It is execution, discussion, planning, deciding. It's just constant work in that form of just providing guidance and coaching and leading throughout the process. So my day is really stuck in meetings. And then, you know, I get home about 7 o'clock. Usually dinner's already been done with my husband and the kids. So I don't get to participate too much in dinner. If I do, it's me usually door dashing or picking up takeout. As I said earlier, takeout. I might cook once a month, maybe. And you probably may or may not eat what I make. it's not great. And then I get my hour and a half or so with the kids before they go to bed, probably 1:30, 2 in the morning. I would say I'm probably more average of a 2 a.m. go to bed. At some point, I probably ate something in between there. And that's the truth that I repeat. And then it goes right back into it. So that's a typical day for me.
Hence why you said in the 21 questions, you're a night owl. That it makes sense now.
Yeah.
It was refreshing to hear about your husband being a stay-at-home dad, because our producer on the show, Corey, he's also a stay-at-home dad as well, as he supports his wife as she follows her career goals. But what are some, obviously, I have to say, you're probably one of the most confident, passionate people we've ever had on this show. And so obviously you love your career, but what are some downsides of career in sports and entertainment that many don't see?
Yeah, I think it really depends on your perspective. I mean, I think when we are talking to somebody about this opportunity, like I said, it's a lifestyle. So it requires a lot of time, especially on the team side. And I think some people just don't realize to what extent. I mean, our lives and our schedules of our personal lives and our professional lives are all dictated by a schedule. And once that schedule comes out, like, you got to run, you know, and especially on the revenue team, because if you miss that moment, if you don't do everything you need to do to get the most maximization off that event, then you lose that event. You never get that event again. So it's this constant sort of thinking and driving ways in which you get to those moments. It just really takes a lot out of you. So you have to have a lot to give. And I think if you're not ready for that and conditioned for that, it could be a downside. And I think that's why it's really challenging for some people to kind of push through those moments. Because it depends on what role you are, right? If you're lower on the totem pole, let's say, you're going to have to do all that stuff. You're going to pay less. And so that's probably another, I would say, downside is in the beginning, you know, your salaries are low, but your commitment is extremely high, because you have to be high because we're all at the high level. Over time, as you grow in your career, you know, then the pay starts to really sort of add up. And, you know, hopefully you see the return on your investment you made in time earlier. But I would say that it's challenging, you know, for individuals, and it could be a downside if you don't have the ability to push through to those next moments.
From your perspective, what sets you apart?
Feels like everything, you know. I mean, ultimately, I mean, you have the traditional, like, clear things as a woman and a person of color that sets me apart in terms of being different in the room. I've always seen that as a difference that adds value. Obviously, I feel like it's my superpower in the room, and I hope that my superpower diminishes because more of us will be in the room, and it just sort of the environment, of course, but clearly that's one of them. But I think ultimately what I bring to our organization, and that's what I usually focus in on, it's my hard work and my high level of execution. I don't just say what needs to be done. I actually get into the weeds and I want to get my hands on it. And I want to play a role in the execution, especially when you get to a leadership position, like a C-level. Often it seems like, and what I've seen in the past is, you're sort of saying what you want and then waiting for your team to deliver. Like, I'm not gonna push you off the building. I wanna help build the machine, and I wanna make sure that we're there and I'm supporting you from beginning to end. And so I think that's one of the things that set me apart.
Building on that though, Deanna, is that an evolution in your management style, or has that always been your leadership style?
I think that's always been my style. You know, I think it's something that, you know, I think as you grow and you think about the kind of leader you want to be, you think about the ways in which you wanted to be supported. And I had some very good support. So I'm not saying that I wasn't given that support. I just always saw that there's an opportunity to get just closer, you know. And not just in the work process, but also in the peer-to-peer perspective. Like, though I'm your leader, I still want to be your peer, you know, and I think that's really important. So I think what also sets me apart is sort of my connection with my teammates. I don't care what, I'm on text chains with inside sales reps, which are entry level. And, you know, I'm in Instagram chats and stuff with, you know, individuals on my team that are two or three layers behind. And, you know, none of that really matters to me. I like to create an environment of a common place where hierarchy doesn't matter, and that we're all just sort of equal in that regard, and that we can support each other, and it allows everybody to step up and grow and have confidence, not have this sense of fear based on titles. And so I think from a leadership perspective, that sets me apart. On a personal level, I would say I'm obsessed with learning. I have a high Q of curiosity. And then I just pride myself on, like I said in the beginning, just wanting to be a difference maker. It's not so much about like, I'm going to get something from this because I love what I do, but ultimately I want to be somewhere where I can make a difference. And I think that ultimately, if I'm on your team, then that means that you're going to get somebody that you can always rely on, and that somebody who will deliver, because I will not sleep clearly until I deliver. So I think that's a key component, I would say, that sets me apart.
Have you signed on to Masterclass?
No, I haven't.
You haven't. Okay.
No, I haven't. I've seen a lot of those advertisements, though, so I'm clearly in the right wheelhouse to start some getting into them.
You could probably host your own masterclass, Deanna. You don't need to sign up for the the other one.
I'll sign up for it. That's for sure.
I know. I'll take hers too.
You guys are too kind.
Well, the Dynamo organization is a shining light in the Houston community in terms of its outreach. But on a personal level, are there any charitable organizations that you support or volunteer with?
Yeah. So one thing, so my husband and I, we host a charitable golf outing in our hometown outside of Flint, of Durand, Michigan. Unfortunately, my father-in-law passed away 5 years ago. And when he passed away, he was just a huge golfer and just, you know, sort of a somebody that everybody knew where we went to high school. And so we decided that we were going to start hosting this event in his honor. So we raised $40,000 in 5 years and the small golf course event that we host. And we raised the money for the West Flint Optimist Club, and the money goes back to their Flint youth programs. It was unfortunate last year we had to cancel it, and it's every year in September. So we're hoping to bring it back this year. We love doing that event. And then here in Houston, you know, every town I go to, every city that I've worked in, I embrace sort of, you know, the initiatives of the organization. So that ends up being, again, because the lifestyle piece, I think you just become connected. So I support the MD Anderson Cancer Center. We make donations and join up with their boot walk. And so we participated in that, my family and I do. We just recently volunteered and donated to the Houston Food Bank. And we try to get in. So I actually brought my kids this year to our event, which I thought was really fun to integrate them in. And then we host a big event with kids meals that we just hosted with our partners at Kroger. I always try to make a personal donation as well when we have those events. So we're always supporting anything that the team is supporting, because it just feels so connected to our personal lives.
It's all tremendous. And I definitely love the connection to honoring your father-in-law through that golf tournament. So that's very special. Who are your heroes or your sheroes?
Oh man, it's interesting. I look up to a number of people. Like I said, I read a lot, but I think ultimately, like my sheroes, you know, specifically, you know, I'd have to give a lot of credit to my mother and my grandmother who raised me. You know, my mom, you know, she did the best she could with what she had, and she's just a phenomenally strong, independent woman who doesn't take anything from anyone. So I've always appreciated her hard sense. And just her caringness for others, and my grandma as well. You know, I think my grandma's, you know, she had six kids and then had to raise my sister and I as well as an additional kids in our household. And she's just full of love and care. And then three other women that are significant in my life are my mom's sisters, my aunt Kim and my aunt Diana, her older sister and a younger sister. My aunt Kim is super independent, kind of lives life her way, which was always, you know, inspiring. And my aunt, my older aunt, just super dedicated to her family. And she's just a great role model of a mother and somebody who's just super dedicated as a wife and a mom. And then my sister, I think, you know, it's weird because my sister is a little sister. We're 2 years apart, but like when I was growing up and thinking about who I wanted to be, the first person I always thought about is like, I want to be that person for my sister. I want to be a good role model. I want to show her that we can change this path and we can, you know, do something different that change, you know, the environment in which we grew up in. Not to say it was terrible, but, you know, it could have been better. And I think we have an opportunity to change that. So I wanted to, you know, sort of set that example, and she inspired me to do that. So she's a big support for me, and she's always encouraging me along the way to just keep going. So those are, I would say, are my sheroes. And oddly enough, my hero, and I said this earlier, I had such an obsession with Michael Jordan when I was a kid as a hero. Like, I don't know if I saw, you know, like one of the slam dunk contests when I was like seven, and that was inspired me to want to play basketball. And I had this obsession with Michael Jordan. I read every book. It was just a sense of like, here's somebody who wants to be great and there's no apologies about it. And I was just so inspired by that. And it just, I don't know. I think that vision of what he did with his career was something like anybody can be the Michael Jordan of their thing, you know? And I thought that like, that was really inspirational for me. So he was big for me growing up.
When you have a little bit of downtime, what are your hobbies?
Well, I don't have a lot of time. You know, obviously it's doing a lot of, it's activities with my kids. I mean, any moment I have that I can spend with the kids, I do. And we do not sit around often. So if you know, we'll go to, you know, jump places and arcades. I think we own Dave & Buster's. That's one of their favorite places to go. But we're constantly out and about, going out to dinner because I don't cook. So we're always doing things. So that's probably the bulk of my activity is in hobbies. I love photography and capturing moments. So when I'm with the kids, I always have a camera for going anywhere. I try to take pictures and I try to capture them. And on my spare time, if I can find it, I try to, I sort of build these yearbooks of the year so we can have them for memories. It's funny. I asked my mom when I was having my twins, I said, you know, can you have any pictures? And she gives me this sad little envelope of like four, like, picture. I'm like, this is my whole childhood is in this envelope. Like this is, I want to give my kids, you know, memories and capture these moments. So I'm really connected to the capturing of moments and delivering those moments for them. And then, you know, I listen to audiobooks, which is really helpful on a drive. And so that's why I read is I turn to audiobooks because I, like I said, I'm obsessed with learning and I have to find a way to bring that into my life and carve out time for that. So my drives, I'm laying in bed before I fall asleep, before I pass out. You know, I'll listen to as much as I can before I fall asleep. And then when I'm working on my laptop, it's those late night TV binge watching, you know, I love to binge a television show. I don't need to be 100% engaged to know what's going on, which is helpful. But I find myself not missing. So if you talk about a TV show, I generally probably have seen it. Couldn't tell you the names of the characters, but I know if I can give you a thumbs up or thumbs down, if it was good.
Well, you are truly living your best life.
I'm trying.
It's not just words. Like it's in your spirit. It's in your energy. And if I ever need a boost, I'm going to grab a Red Bull and give you a call, Deanna. And I'm sure you can power me up for a couple of weeks.
Don't forget the candy. I'm a candy junkie as well. So
yes. Speaking on that, you don't need to give her a call because she missed out one thing. She's actually a podcast host as well on top of all of that. So
right.
Tell us where we can find it and just tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So I launched a podcast at the beginning of COVID, and it was something I was already planning on doing. And it was an opportunity I saw in our industry where, you know, when I got this job at the Dynamo and the Dash, I had a number of women that were like reaching out to me and men too. And they're just like, how'd you get the role? What's your story? Like all of a sudden my story got really interesting as a chief, you know, a chief revenue officer, a chief level executive in the NBA or the MLS or the NHL. Like if you're young, especially a person of color or and a woman, you know, it's really interesting to anybody else who has those same aspirations of getting there. And I thought it was really interesting, the amount of conversations that I was having. I thought there was an opportunity that we could be having more of those conversations with other women. because I think that there's this perception, and you hear it all the time, this industry is male dominating, right? This is a male dominated industry. And just by saying that, you're just telling, especially women, that like, this isn't the right environment for you. Like if you try and work really hard, you're probably not going to break through because males are just dominating everywhere. And so I thought it was interesting because I've had, you know, the honor of meeting and knowing so many women who are just doing badass things in this industry, who are dominating this industry. And for some reason, people don't know everyone. Some people don't know me. I'm not saying you should, but in general, like there isn't enough platforms for us to amplify their voices and get to know who they are and learn about their journeys. And so I thought it was just a great opportunity to start those conversations. I didn't know what I was doing, but I did my best. So if you listen to the first few episodes, it's a little shaky, but it gets better as the season goes on. So I record as many as I can in terms of the conversation. And then I edit them, you know, before I have to publish them. And those are in the late night hours of my days. I'm listening to them and trying to get them ready to go. So I just launched season two this past Monday.
Awesome. Congratulations. What's the name of it?
Women Blazers, and you can listen to it anywhere where you listen to your podcast. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts are probably the two main places I notice that people are listening.
Awesome. Well, listeners, make sure you go and subscribe. And if you can go back in time and speak to a younger you, what advice would you give yourself?
You know, it's interesting because I feel like I've been talking to my younger self since I was, like I said, like 12 years old, you know, sort of putting myself, like coaching myself of getting here. So I think if I was going back and I was like my older self, I would just tell myself that the vision you have for your life is not out of reach. And so ignore the noise and just keep pushing forward. And I think I would just sort of give myself the assurance that I was on the right path, even though people were like, no, you need a real plan because you're not going to work for a professional sports team in high school. And I think ignoring that as I did, I think it would have been helpful to know that it was absolutely possible.
Well, I know the sky is the limit for you, Deanna, and one day you're going to be on this podcast with us and you will be commissioner of some sports league and owner of some team. But what is next for you? You've had a plan, you said, for your life since you were very young. So can you share some of your next steps?
Yeah, ultimately the next step for me and where my vision had been, you know, over the last, I would say, probably 5 years is, you know, putting myself in a position to be a team president or CEO of a team. So that is the direction in which I continue to want to develop, to be in a position where somebody would entrust me with that ultimate responsibility.
I see it. What do you see, Drew?
I mean, the sky is the limit with you. Like I said earlier, you're just oozing with ambition. So keep chasing that dream.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. It's an honor to share my story and these details. And, I could say, like, you know, I'm not a person that I won't stop. I won't settle. And I hope that I'll reach there. We'll be back on this podcast and you'll be like, remember when we talked about that?
Love it.
Perfect.
So when you're getting in the zone, Deanna, not that you ever need help getting in the zone, but what's on your playlist?
Some of them I probably can't list. Lately, it's funny because I was driving, I'm back in the office. And so yesterday I was listening to Black Parade, Beyonce. And then just everything going on right now, I listened to I Can't Breathe by her, which is just a great song. And then something with more like upbeat, like I love my Best of Stevie Wonder. I had some Janet Jackson playing yesterday, Control. Like I love that album. And then the new Bruno Mars, Leave the Door Open.
I love that.
Such a good beat. They performed that on the Grammys. Now I'm like obsessed with.
That's great. Yes. Well, this has been so much fun, Deanna. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me very much.
Absolutely. Chief Revenue Officer for the Houston Dynamo and Dash, Deanna Witter. We really thank you for your time. And yeah, this has been great. This has been so inspiring. And I know our listeners are going to be motivated to chase their dreams as well.
Thank you both. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Deanna. And we'll continue to find ways to collaborate. International Women's Day was just the start of some great things that we can do for our community. So we hope to stay connected with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to staying connected as well, and wish you guys all the best as you continue your mission on this. I love what you guys are doing.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in. To the athletes, keep being the best you can be. Run your race with excellence. To the parents of athletes, let's continue to support our children with patience, grace, and understanding, learning to recognize how to truly become the guides and the stewards that we are supposed to be. To everyone, be willing to share your experiences to help others along their paths, and always be open to the wisdom that comes your way.
For more information about the 21 Podcast, 21 Media, and services provided by Train Harder 21, visit the website at drewlasker.com and follow us across all social media platforms. Remember to add this podcast to your playlist, subscribe, rate, and review. Until next episode of 21, Train Harder.